Okay, we're looking at Shri Guru Paduka Panchakam, verse 5, which goes, Ananta Sansara Samudra Tara Naukaita Bhyam Stira Bhakti Da Bhyam. Right? I'm doing it with the meter, spoken meter, so you can hear the meter, right? Jadyabdi Sanshoshana Vadava Bhyam Namo Namashri Guru Paduka Bhyam. Okay. Let's look at the first line again. Again in meter and rhythm. Ananta Sansara Samudra Tara Naukayita Bhyam Stira Bhakti Da Bhyam. So it's saying, again, salutations again and again, Namo Namaha from the second line. But back to the first line. First let's do Pada D, the fourth quarter of the verse. Namo Namah Shri Guru Paduka Bhyam. Reverence again and again to the two sandals of Shri Guru. Then we go back to the first line and we have an agreement with, let me make sure everyone's muted. Here we go. We have an agreement between Paduka Bhyam and Naukaita Bhyam in the middle of the first line. So those are agreeing in case, number, and gender. Therefore, one is describing the other. They're in apposition. So these two sandals of the revered guru, Shri Guru, are Naukaita. They are a boat or a ship. They're like a ship. It's like a simile. They're or a metaphor. They are a ship. So again, in agreement, Naukaita Bhyam, not that there's two ships, right? It's agreeing in case, number, gender with the two sandals. So they are a ship to Tara, to cross over or to save us from the verbal root ter, to cross over, but also to save, to rescue. To bring someone across, okay? So the goddess Tara as the sort of savior goddess in Tantric Buddhism. And from where we get the root, the word avatar as well, avatara. So they are a boat to cross or bring us across the samudra, the ocean. Okay. See, if I was giving you this verse, by the way, I would give it to you with the compound broken up by hyphens because it's just compassionate to beginners. otherwise, you have to know where a word ends and where another word begins. How could you possibly know that? By looking them up in the dictionary one by one. But it is really hard unless you have good vocabulary because you're not sure what exactly you're looking up, you see. So I would hyphenate this for you. But anyway, Ananta Sansara Samudra Tara. So this boat, Naukaita, is a Tara, a savior, or something that brings us across the Samudra, the ocean of Sansara, the cycle of suffering. Okay? Yes, it literally means transmigration from birth. I mean, from death to birth to re-death to rebirth and so on. But by the medieval period, it just really meant the endless cycle of suffering. Just get us out of this rat trap, please. You know, that's the sense that which it's largely used in. So, samsara, the cycle of suffering, which is ananta, seemingly endless. It's not, in fact, endless. Well, let's just take the word here as Pradipika does in the sense of infinite, okay? Because the word ananta literally means endless, but certainly can mean infinite as well, because we know from the other texts and scriptures of the tradition that they certainly do not think that suffering is endless. They think it's beginningless, but endable. So we must take the word as you know, infinite. But even there, it doesn't work, because if the ocean was infinite, how could a boat ever cross it? Well, it couldn't by definition. So it's just hyperbole. It's just typical South Asian hyperbole. The seemingly, I would translate the seemingly endless ocean of suffering, Ananta Samsara Samudra, the seemingly endless ocean of suffering, where I'm essentially taking the adjective Ananta as modifying ocean, because you can do that, but you could take it, you know, the ocean of seemingly endless suffering as well. That's totally fine. Okay. So, how, one wonders, do the sandals of the Sri Guru take us across this ocean of seemingly endless suffering? Well, because in the next word, compound, sthira bhakti dabhyam, agreeing again in case number and gender with the dative dual of the end of the verse, okay? So they grant or bestow da with the ending bhyam to agree again in case number gender with the main object, so, or indirect object in this case. The dative dual. So they bestow da, the stira bhakti, steady devotion, sort of firm, unyielding, steady, unrelenting, continuous devotion. So devotion is clearly important to this author, and he sees it as the means, as instrumental to that boat that's going to get us across the ocean of suffering. So this is, I won't get into this, but just to say briefly, this is alluding to this particular kind of yoga called Guru Bhakti Yoga, which means if you're lucky enough to latch on to a fully awake, fully liberated being, if you just absorb your consciousness in that being completely for a while, you get a transmission of their inner state. You get to experience what their consciousness is like. This is true of anyone. If you absorb your consciousness completely in anyone, you get a transmission of their state of consciousness, for better or for worse. Often for worse in codependent relationships, right? But the idea is, in Guru Bhakti Yoga, that for some years on end, you are utterly devoted, utterly absorbed in this being, this liberated and awakened being, who you know, in the traditional context, you have direct access to as well, that you're around in person, you know. And the idea is... Well, not the idea. What can actually happen is this kind of absorption of their state and an attainment of their realization through one pointed focus on that person. But this is described as far back as potentially Yoga Sutra. And if you want a modern account of what this feels like and what actually happens, read Swami Muktananda's Play of Consciousness, which, for those who haven't encountered this kind of thing before, is kind of startling. You know, this book is an amazing book. It's unsettling and disturbing for those who don't think Guru Bhakti Yoga is a good idea. But you could say that Muktananda lucked out, you know, because the person that he latched onto, Bhagavan Nityananda of Ganeshpuri, was an authentically, completely liberated being, you know, who's really indescribable. But anyway, so he did this. He did this Guru Bhakti Yoga, and he does it, and he describes it beautifully, and it's a fascinating account to read, and unsettling only in the sense that you're like, well, shit, if you did that with the wrong person, someone who seemed to be liberated but really was not, then, or was actually crazy, you'd really fuck yourself over big time. So, but you, as I say, we could say he lucked out, or his intuition was good, or his karma was good, or one of those things. But it's a fascinating read for those, and because, especially for Westerners, because it puts you in a whole different world. Like, it's the cultural context of it is completely alien to most Westerners. So if you want to, like, take a ride, it's a true story, take a ride, though, into South Asian culture in a substantial way, I'll recommend that book. So that's what this verse is alluding to, this Guru Bhakti Yoga, detailed in Chit Shakti Vilas, or Play of Consciousness, by Swami Muktananda. Notice all the Swami names are incorrectly pronounced by Westerners, right? Muktananda, Yogananda, right? But it's Sandhi, Mukta, Ananda, Muktananda, Yoga, Ananda, Yoga, Ananda. We'll come to Sandhi in a minute. Second line, Ja Dyabdi Sanshoshana Vadava Vadava Bhyam. So again, in agreeing in case number gender with the noun it modifies, which again is Paduka Bhyam, and the sandals in the dative dual, fourth case dual. Agreeing with that, we have this very unusual word, the submarine fire he's translating here, Vadava. Well, what happened is that, you know, when lava flows under water in the ocean, you know, that's what's being called the submarine fire here. But for whatever reason, you know, it became this kind of spiritual metaphor in Indian literature. It does not occur often at all, but it occurs in this sort of a metaphor here. So Vadava, the underwater lava flow, submarine fire thing, is so powerful that they're imagining it could dry up the ocean. Okay? So the sandals of Sri Guru are like a submarine fire, so, like a undersea lava flow, so hot and powerful that it could sanshoshana, dry up, desiccate the ocean, abdi, right, of jadya. Now, this is nice because it reminds us that I forgot to do our Saraswati invocation, because it's the very same word in Saraswati invocation, jadya, the abstract noun of jada, meaning dense, dull, stupid, thick-headed, foggy-headed, is jada. This is the abstract noun, jadya, insensibility, dullness, thick-headedness, ignorance also, that we get in the Saraswati invocation as well. So the idea here is that that why is the metaphor of the ocean so important to use twice here? Because the ocean, you have to remember, to Indian culture, just seems uncrossable. You know, it's just way too big, and it's just, you know, and by the way, even, you know, today, if a Brahmin, you know, crosses the ocean and returns, he's got to do a whole ritual because he's been become ritually impure by that act. Well, it's not, you know, that's the whole thing. But anyway, the ocean is just seems absolutely uncrossable. It's vast. And so seems the ocean of suffering. I mean, the amount of suffering in the world, the amount of suffering in all our past lives, the amount of our ignorance, what we have to overcome to be fully awake and aware and free, just seems monumental. There's no way we could overcome all of this ignorance and stupidity. And so we need a salvific force, and that is, well, I argue lineage transmission, and this author is ambiguous about, is it, you know, maybe it's Guru Bhakti Yoga for him. The one thing, devotion to a true guru, the one thing that can overcome this ocean. But anyway, that's the verse. Any questions on it before we sing it? It's relatively simple if you have the vocabulary. Oh, and these are compounds. Again, you haven't got to compounds, but so don't worry about that. Let's just sing it because we have very little time today, I'm afraid. Okay, so it goes, I'll just sing the first two words so you get the where we're going. Ananta samsara. So that's our key. Deep breath in. Ananta samsara samudra tara naukahitabhyam sthira bhakti dabhyam jadyabhi sansho shanavadavabhyam namo namah shri guru padukabhyam. And one more time, deep breath in. Ananta samsara samudra tara naukaitabhyam sthira bhakti dabhyam jadyabdhi samshoshanavadavabhyam namo namah shri guru padukabhyam. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. You guys should be mouthing the words along with me at the very least, okay? Notice I'm really observing the longs and shorts, long vowels versus short vowels. Really, 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 really matter. Let's move on. So that's with the invocation. You have it memorized, I hope. Yakundendu. This is the key. Yakundendu. All together, deep breath in. Yakundendu tushara hara dhavala yashubra vastravrta yavina varadanda manditakara yashweta padmasana ya brahma chitta shankara prabhriti bhir devai sada vandita samam patu saraswati bhagavati nishesha jadyaha. Om I'm Saraswatyaya Namaha. I saw two of you without lips moving. Very disappointed. Saw one person with lips moving. That was Ananya. She gets a gold star on her forehead. And some of you don't have cameras on, which is also sad. Okay. Moving on. Just want to talk about Sunday a little bit before we look at homework stuff, okay? So, Sunday, well, I was revising the handout for you, and I didn't finish that, but the handout is also, it's in the big 40-page handouts from Harish Files. For those who don't, the Saraswati invocation I just did is in that handout too, 40-page handout called Sanskrit from Harish Files or something like that. It's one of our main handouts because it's got a lot of stuff in one big PDF. So the Saraswati invocation is there, but also the Sandhi sheet. Now, you don't need to be looking at that. If you don't have it handy and it's too complicated, don't worry about it because I'm going to explain it super, super simply, okay? But if you do have the Sunday handout, the vowel Sunday handout, great. So here's the deal. Sunday is what happens when the end of one word and the beginning of another word come together, coalesce, right? So it's like slurring words together, almost. It happens more in French than in English, and it happens systematically in Sanskrit, right? So first rule, rule number one, if you don't have the handout in front of you, write this down. Rule number one, simple vowel plus like simple vowel coalesce into the long vowel of the same. Okay, so we're going to give examples. That means short or long A, I'm putting it in the title. Short or long A plus short or long A, I'm using the name of the letter, I should just say, up or ah plus up or ah equals ah. There it is in the chat window. Someone needs to mute themselves, by the way. So, example. You know, example everyone knows from yoga. Bala, child, plus asana, balasana, right? Swami names we just mentioned. Mukta plus ananda. Muktananda. And so on. Anytime, ever, you have a or a plus a or a, they coalesce to a. Okay? That's the rule. That just has to be memorized, but it's not hard, is it? Now, Abhinavagupta's, the great tantric master Abhinavagupta presents the science of linguistic mysticism in chapter 3 of his Tantra Loka. What's going on there? Well, he's saying the structure of the Sanskrit language actually encodes the deep structure of reality or of consciousness at the very least. So, you know, he takes the sound to be to in this linguistic mysticism, it stands for anuttara, which not only begins with a, but has two more as in it. And anuttara means the absolute. Anuttara means the absolute, that literally, that higher than which there is nothing. Anuttara, sounding like and meaning the same as the English prefix un, like unsurpassable. That's what it literally means. I put an extra T there, sorry. But anuttara, literally unsurpassable, untranscendable, that means the absolute. Okay? So anuttara is the absolute. Now, when the absolute doubles back on itself, that is to say, becomes aware of itself, every single time it does that, it experiences bliss. And so Abhinavagupta says, let's look at the first rule of the Sanskrit language. See, we didn't learn it in this order, but traditionally, the first rule of Sanskrit grammar is what I just put in your chat window. A plus a is a. That's the first rule of Sanskrit grammar, literally, in the traditional way of teaching. So he says that means when anuttara, the absolute, becomes aware of itself, doubles back on itself, it experiences ananda, bliss. You see? So he says this is what a plus a equals a is telling us. When the absolute becomes aware of itself, and the absolute, by the way, is you, right, too. It's because it's whenever consciousness is the absolute. So when consciousness becomes aware of itself, it experiences ananda. Yes, when it does vimarsha, that's exactly it. The vimarsha capacity, right? So that's why you can read the same rule of as this way. Plus ah equals ananda, which is, right, plus ah equals ah, right? Because there you're reading it as Shiva and Shakti. Where the absolute, by its power of Vimarsha Shakti, which is Anuttara, with a long A, feminine, that makes Ananda. So there's also there's a playful thing he does there, right? Where it's like Shiva and Shakti make love that's blissful. You know, what is that love making? That's consciousness becoming aware of itself, right? So that's where it's Anuttara, the absolute in the Shiva form is the light of consciousness, Prakasha. Anuttara, the absolute in the Shakti form, is Vimarsha, the power of self-reflective awareness, come together, Ananda, bliss. Okay? So whether you read it as A plus A equals A or A plus A equals A, same difference. That's the flexibility of Sanskrit. But the point is, you get the basic point, right? I gave it in a deeper way there just now. But the basic point is, when consciousness becomes fully aware of its real nature, it is always blissful without exception. That's a rule of the universe, just like this is a rule of grammar, you see? So there's a cool thing happening, because he's giving you this important teaching, is that, you know, consciousness is innately blissful, because whenever it becomes aware of itself in its fullness and in its real nature, it always experiences joy. Whether that joy manifests, it can manifest in many different ways, you know. So if consciousness becomes aware of itself in the moment of, you know, sipping coffee, or in the moment of making love, or in the moment of lying in the grass, or in the moment of looking at the sky, or in the moment of holding your child, or in the moment of, you know, smelling a disgusting smell, right? Because this isn't just positive experiences. Any experience, consciousness can become aware of itself, and it experiences a version of joy, right? So with the disgusting smell, what's joyful about that? It's that consciousness is fascinated by how disgusting it is. And that fascination is the joy. It's like it just fascinated by how horrifically revolting this porta potty is, you know? That's the joy. Now, but you don't feel it as joy if you're just in your mind state. Oh, this sucks. I've got to go in this porta potty, right? But when consciousness becomes aware of itself, it's like, wow, look at that. You know, that's the mind version of it, but there's this joy in simply being alive. Holy shit, I get to be alive, to smell disgusting smells, as well as all these other wonderful things. You know, see what I mean? So consciousness is joyous. It is constantly joyous to be embodied, to have painful experiences, disgusting experiences, and happy experiences. So there's a joy in the pain as well, a kind of joy, if you can access consciousness's real nature, right? Like this joy of, I'm lucky to be alive to live sad moments, as the great guru in disguise, Louis C.K. put it. I'm lucky to be alive to live sad moments. That's the joy that you can experience while being sad. Okay, so that's all kind of part of this teaching of A plus A equals A, the basic, the number, the first rule of grammar in the traditional order of teaching, which Maurer didn't do and none of those guys did, but that's, you know, maybe we'll just start the whole class from the beginning and do it the traditional way too. Okay, so next rule. It's the same, well, this is the same rule. Grammatically speaking, this is the same rule, which is any simple vowel plus any like simple vowel equals the long version of that vowel, right? So you need to be able to state it that way. Otherwise, you don't see the pattern, you know? So eat or e plus eat or e equals e. Okay, so in the linguistic mysticism, I stands for icha, the power of will. I stands for ishana, the power of sovereignty. These are shaktis, right? All the vowels are different shaktis. So the icha, the power of will, when it becomes aware of itself, or when consciousness becomes aware of its power of willing, then it acquires sovereignty, right? Those people who like stuff like The Secret or The Law of Attraction would be into this, right? Because when you fully understand or sense your innate power of will, then you have sovereignty, ishana, which means the ability to actualize that will. Okay? It means you have self-possession. You sense your own innate power, but also the you sense your ability to put it into action. So self-aware, icha with the vimarsha, right, the doubling back, e plus e equals e, ishana, the power of sovereignty, right? So I'm just giving you guys a super quick primer on this.
Harish?
Yeah.
In your handout, it says E is Ishwara.
Ah, sorry. Ishwara, but it's the same thing. They're just synonyms.
That was my question.
Yeah,
okay,
Ishana. Oh, I spelled it wrong too, didn't I? So Ishana or Ishwara, same thing. Lordship, right? Here not meaning the Lord in the masculine. Here it's an abstract, you know. So sovereignty or lordship, which is not masculine. You know, there's not a gender thing here. So this is by the way in the handouts too. This whole linguistic mysticism is briefly kind of, it's listed there in one of the pages of that long PDF. Do you know what page that is, Davey?
I've got it marked 16, but I don't know. It's in my handwriting, so I don't know if that was the
Hold it up to the camera while we're here. Yeah, there's the linguistic mysticism page, you guys. So it's got everything. Yeah, so you can, if you find that in your 40-page PDF, that's nice, because it's got the Latin letter, the Devanagari letter, and then the Sharada letter, which is the letters that Abhinavagupta used.
It's right the next page after Saraswati.
Oh, good. The next page after the Saraswati invocation.
Yes.
Thank you. So, lastly, for now, U plus U equals U, right? It's the same rule. The full version is long or short. U plus long or short U equals long U. U. That's the full version of the rule, right? But in the linguistic mysticism, U equals unmesha, which means it literally means the unfolding or the opening or the blossoming. So the blossoming of a flower or the opening of the eyes. See, it's really cool because in English we don't have a word like that. We don't use the word blossoming for people opening their eyes, right? So imagine that there's one word for anything opening up and blossoming out, whether it's eyes in the morning or whether, which includes consciousness, right? Opening up, blossoming out into the waking state. Or flowers opening up, blossoming, anything that unfurls and opens up, right? That's unmesha. So very beautiful word that we don't have a precise equivalent for. But, you know, you translate it different ways in different contexts. So you translate it as opening or blossoming, you know, or unfurling, right? Now, for Abhinavagupta, this is the incipient jnana shakti, the incipient power of knowing. That knowing, true knowing, comes from a kind of opening up to something, you know? And that's unmesha. So, see, he says, so u plus u equals u, what does that mean? Well, when that unmesha happens, that opening into a new awareness, this is a kind of primordial kind of jnana shakti, power of knowing, but not intellectual knowing, right? But just innate knowing, sort of sensing what the nature of something is or the nature of yourself is. When that gains power through the vimarsha, through self-awareness, then that equals what's called in the tradition urmi, the wave. So this is getting into deep stuff because there's a whole scripture about the urmi, urmi, the wave of consciousness, whereby, so everything that's come before, right? Consciousness, its innate bliss, will, and its innate sovereignty, and unfolding, all of that now culminates in this urmi, this cresting wave, that now will spill over into kriya shakti, the power of action. Okay, so how does this work? So urmi, The technical definition of this urmi in the tradition, tantric tradition we're talking about, is the incipient power of action. It's this cresting wave with all those shaktis that came before moving towards spilling forth into action, both at the beginning of time with the Big Bang, that's the Big Bang was that, but also now, and now, and now, and every moment that wave keeps cresting over, you know? So it's an incredible sort of description of reality that we're only just scratching the surface of. The scriptures that I was referring to, the Urmi Kaularnava, is unpublished even in Sanskrit. It exists only in manuscript form. So you've got to get a scan of it from a scholar, got it from somebody, or somebody typed in parts of it in a dusty library in Berlin or Kathmandu. There's a whole, you know, when it comes to the manuscripts, there's a whole crazy Indiana Jones aspect of this thing. So now, what last thing he does in the linguistic mysticism is he says, how does this power of action work? It works through further vimarsha, further self-awareness. Self-awareness is the key to everything, right? Where if now you have, because what makes a diphthong vowel? Let's take the diphthong, so we have A, I, O, ow, okay? So how do you get A? Well, if you've got, E plus U, or E plus U, right? So let me write this correctly. Again, we're learning actual grammar rules in the midst of this tantric philosophy. So okay, there's the diphthong, right? E or E plus U or U equals A, right? So now, see, everything's coming together. So he's saying, look, the power of will, Icha, with its innate power of sovereignty, Ishwara or Ishana, joins with this Unmesha, this kind of knowing that's not intellectual knowing, right? And this is all coming together now into the breaking wave of the power of action. And that's so the power of action, Kriya Shakti, he takes to be A, I, O, Ao, which are simply the recombinations of these shaktis into more complex and detailed forms. Because how do you get, I miswrote it. You're totally right. See, I'm going too fast. Scott, thank you. Absolute complete miswrite there. I don't know what my brain did. Okay, there we go. I knew something was, I knew something was weird. Okay, but it's the same principle in terms of the linguistic mysticism, even though I said it wrong. The anuttara shakti, the power of the absolute consciousness, coming together with the icha, the power of will, and the ishana, it's making the A, right? Because this is all just combinations and recombinations now. What he's talking about is an interference pattern, right? It's like in physics, if you drop, you know, rocks into water and all the waves come and then the waves merge, that's an interference pattern. And what he's trying to say is that the manifest universe is nothing but consciousness interfering with itself, in the physics sense of that word, whereby when you have waves of energy and they meet each other, they create these incredibly complex patterns. And that's everything. That's everything we see around us and everything we experience is nothing but the essential fundamental waves of energy that constitute the shaktis of consciousness interacting with each other and creating this interference pattern, which is all the varieties of human experience and every kind of experience, okay? So, and he's charting that with these vowel relationships, right? So we have the waves of anuttara shakti and icha and ishana shakti interacting to make the first element of kriya shakti. So if you're not following me, that's totally understandable. I wasn't even following myself. I got it wrong there for a minute. So lastly then, how do we get I? Well, if you take A and you add in another and you strengthen it with another extra, remember I is just the vriddhi form of A. So if it's technically what's happening linguistically is you're like infusing another anuttara, another into it. Okay. So this, when you get this, now this is not what I'm writing here. This is where it gets really interesting because this is not actually a grammar rule and yet it's linguistically true. Right. And Abhinavagupta being this mega genius, even though this is not a grammar rule in the Sanskrit, the last thing I put in there, just the last thing, is not a grammar rule, but it's linguistically true that A is, when you infuse an extra or sound into A, it makes I, because what is I? I is the same diphthong pulled a little bit apart due to a strengthening of the a component. So just a moment of linguistics here. Just do this with your mouth. A, E. The two vowels, a, E. A little, again, a, E. Now do the sound A, A. You feel how it's a plus E? A, E, A. Now, I, do you feel how that's like A plus E? A, E, I, right? Do you feel the relationships in your body? Because I is just a stronger version of A. So these are linguistic truths, you know, that we're talking about too. There's all these overlapping things going on. Same way, now do this in your mouth. A, U. Ooh. Now do oh. And now do ow. Do you feel how it's the same movement? The movement from ah to ooh is the same as oh, is the same as ow. So linguistically, what's going on there? And this time I'll I'll write it correctly. So now we're on this other diphthong, right? There we go. A plus U, or A plus U is O, right? And then linguistically true, but not a grammar rule. Is that, you see? That's what's happening linguistically. But that's not the Sunday rule. The Sunday rule is perfectly clear if you look at your sheet, right? Because, you know, they kept things from getting way too complicated in the actual grammar. Okay, so finally, A, I, O, Ao equals Kriya Shakti, meaning to say, and Paul Muller has written about this very eloquently, meaning to say that he's saying that the power of action that actually manifests everything is nothing but these complex interference patterns of the fundamental shaktis of consciousness, the fundamental potencies of consciousness. And this is an elegant, elegant thing he's done here with this linguistic mysticism, because in the vowel system, in reality, for all languages, the diphthongs, the complex vowels, are from combinations and recombinations of these fundamental vowels. So what Abhinavagupta is trying to say is not crazy. I mean, it's kind of eccentric in a way, but it's not crazy, because he's saying, look, consciousness is doing the same thing all the time. So what consciousness did when it created language, because that's the miracle of language. Nobody sat down and made it, you know what I mean, except for like Esperanto. But languages are organically evolved, and they all have these common elements. So consciousness, the one consciousness, nobody's individual consciousness and no cultural consciousness, but the one consciousness made language, and the patterns in language tell us something about the patterns by which consciousness constructs all of reality. So we can see, we can do pattern matching for in these different realms, because it's one consciousness making the world and the language which reflects that world, okay? This is all in Tantra Loka chapter 3. It's unbelievably difficult to try and read, but once you sort it out, which Paul Muller has done, he's like, what, two people in the world I know have sorted it out, Alexis Sanderson and Paul Muller. I studied with both of them, so I can explain it to you guys. And I'm giving you the simple explanation, okay? But you can't arrive at the simple explanation until you sort out the details of the complex explanation. That's the unfortunate truth of life, right? You got to look at all this complex data before you can make useful and correct generalizations about the data. Now, Abhinavagupta summarized his discussion in Tantra Loka 3 over in Tantra Sara 3, and I will post that in the group. You can read the Tantra Sara summary of this doctrine, which itself is not that easy to understand, but it's way easier than Tantra Loka. So Jnana Shakti was U and U, right? Because he takes Unmesha to be the real Jnana Shakti. That is to say, Jnana Shakti is not when you intellectually know something, you acquire a concept. Jnana Shakti, the true Jnana Shakti, Abhinavagupta is arguing, is when you open out into something, when you open yourself up into something, when you feel into something, when the consciousness opens out and becomes, rather realizes or actualizes its potential to express as that thing, whatever it is. Okay. Samyukta, you'll have to tell us about the Chatwari Mudita, the four joys. That must be a Buddhist thing, I don't know. The four blisses or something. Okay, so oh, cool. Okay. Let's make sure we have the basic Sunday rule down, though. So I'm pulling up the, I could even screen share maybe. I'll just tape it in. Okay, so in the Sunday rules examples, right, we have these examples. Vadati, he said, plus iti, quote marker, equals vadatiti. Okay, this is an example. Oh, I miswrote it. But this is just an example of Sunday in action in real life, with this typo that I'm fixing. Vadati, he or she or they said. Let's remember actually that third person singular verbs are gender neutral. Any of the three genders, he or she or they said, vadati, iti, quote marker, vadatiti. That's the, in other words, the form in which this is, let's make sure everyone understands this. What you see in the Sanskrit text is vadatiti, and you've got to know how to take it apart. We're talking about, you learn Sunday so you can take it apart. And if you can't, you're absolutely screwed when you're looking at real Sanskrit, you see? Because you're looking up vadatiti, what the heck is vadatiti? And then you realize, oh, wait a second, iti is a quote marker, occurs all the time. Oh, I got to take apart the Sunday. Oh, it's vadati and iti. Now I understand, because vadati is obviously a third person singular verb, like I've learned. Does that make sense? Okay, so another example, gacha, imperative, go. Aditya, a kind of deity, a solar deity, or even the sun. Gachaditya, right? So you would not find this exact phrase, I'm sure, because it literally means go, sun, or go, solar deity. Not a thing you're likely to say in everyday conversation, but gacha, go, aditya, direct, the vocative or direct address form of the solar deity, gachaditya. But anyway, the form you would see is gachaditya, you've got to take apart the Sunday. So for taking apart Sunday, vocabulary is important, so drilling vocabulary is a very, 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 very good idea. And if, when in doubt, you know, drill vocabulary. Okay, so lastly, I got to get going here soon. Mama plus Iva. Mameva, right? There's more Sunday examples. So what you see is mameva. What the heck's that? Oh, wait. Mama means mine or my. Iva, as if or like. I don't know if you'd actually see this phrase, but mameva, it's sort of mine. It's like mine. but anyway, it's about what Sunday forms, because a and I is a, right? Mama plus Eva, it's definitely mine. Mama Eva. So this is a good example that the person who made this handout used, because on the one hand, mine my plus Eva as if is mameva, but mine plus Eva, which means emphasis, it's really definitely mine, mamaiva. Why? Because a plus a equals I. Right? So earlier, earlier I said a wrong thing. Because I said, this isn't really a grammar rule. because I was thinking about something else from going too fast. But it is. I was thinking about how when you separate them, well, never mind. I won't confuse you further. This is a grammar rule. It's there. I was wrong what I said before, that it's not really a grammar rule. That's it. A plus A equals I. As we see here, mama plus Ava is mamaiva. The way you can make mistakes like that after 15 years of Sanskrit, by the way, is that you actually, after a long while, you forget what the rules are. You just automatically do it. You just are doing the Sunday breaking, and you don't remember the exact way it's explained. Or you recognize a form, and you don't know, you can't necessarily name, you know, the grammatical form, but you know what it means. You know, eventually that happens. And that happens when you organically learn language, of course. You know, people use English without knowing what the hell a gerund is. Okay. Now, lastly, what happens, we've been going over, what happens if you have a, if you have a plus, you know, a dissimilar simple vowel, then it goes to the guna of the second, like that, right? But what happens if it's the other way around? A simple vowel plus another simple vowel. Well, then the first goes to its semi-vowel. Okay, so let me give an example. Iti, quote marker, plus uchite, it was said, equals ityuchite. Right, so I, before a dissimilar simple vowel, or any vowel actually, goes to its semi-vowel equivalent. The semi-vowel equivalent of I is ya. So everyone should know the semi-vowel equivalents, right? Like this. Let's do another example. Teshu plus api. Okay, I'll give them to you in 1 second. Teshu plus api teshvapi. Teshvapi, you know, because, well, these equivalencies are not arbitrary. Again, they're linguistic. So feel it in your mouth. E. E. Now, which of the semi-vowels corresponds? Well, our semi-vowels are ya, ra, la, va. So ya corresponds. I, ya. See how your mouth is in the same position? You don't have to move it at all. I, ya. Ya, I. Right? So what's going to be the equivalent semi-vowel to u? It's a very similar position to u. Is it going to be ya, ra, la, va? U, v. Yeah, watch my mouth. U, v. U, v. Right? So equivalent of U is V, semi-vowel equivalent, right? And then obviously the semi-vowel equivalent of R is Ra, you know, so those, the vowel R is Ra, you know, and then the vowel, the semi-vowel equivalent of the vowel O is obviously La, like that. Those don't occur so often, so you don't need to worry so much about that. Okay, so Sunday's actually, Vowel Sunday is super simple, and it just seems complicated right now, but we'll get it sorted out. Okay, I need to go, but what I want you guys to do is talk amongst yourselves, help each other with the homework for 10 minutes, please, because we didn't go over any homework from Egenes, which we were, you know, kind of implicitly supposed to do. So if you guys who have done some Egenes, go over that with each other and take the initiative, please, because I know some of you have done it and can help others. So, Om. Take care, everyone. I'm muting myself, but you can unmute yourself.
Well, hi, guys. My name is Sean. Good morning.
Good morning.
Truthfully, I didn't get very far because I kept getting interrupted this week, but I have a question on the very first page, page 48. I'm having trouble with the instrumental and the dative. It's just not clicking yet. I think it will be once I actually finish, but before I go further, because this is where I'm getting stuck, the first sentence I'm having real trouble with is D, letter D on page 48. Did anyone do it? Anyone can help me with this? Or can I just compare what you got?
What lesson is it?
I'm sorry, lesson five.
What number? I don't have the book with me.
Oh, no worries. Well, I'll just read what I've got and we can see if we can figure it out. So
lesson five, what number?
Lesson five, page 48, number D. And bear with me as I'll try to sound it out. Ashvena Saha Giraha Nirpaha Vichati. And I have three sentences. I came up with the hero goes with the king's horse. But I had first gotten the hero goes with the horse, and I didn't know where to put in the word king. So, and I've come full circle, and I think they're saying the hero goes with the king's horse. What did you guys get?
I think it should be the hero goes. With the horses to the king.
The hero goes with. Wait, say it again. The hero goes with the horse. Wait, say it again.
So Ashwena, Saha meaning with.
Right.
Ashwena meaning with. I think it should be with.
Okay.
The horses.
Right.
Viraha would be the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not Nripaha, it's Nripan.
Oh, you know what? Okay,
yeah.
Here's the problem I'm having. I'm going to have to, it's my handwriting. It looks like H and H, and it's an N.
Yeah.
I put that was the direct object. Right, wait, I'm sorry. So we've got...
No. It wouldn't be. I forget the name of the case, but
no,
it's...
No, I'm sorry. Wait, real quick.
To the king.
To the king. Okay, so the Viran, that's the hero and the subject, or do I have...
No. Vira is Vira. Viraha. With the visarga, with the H.
Okay.
But it's the king word, Nripan.
Got it. Okay, so that's a handwriting issue. Okay, Nripan. Okay.
Yeah.
And I put that as the direct object, that the king was the direct object. Vira is the subject.
It should be kings, plural.
Kings. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so plural. I missed that. Okay. All right. Okay. So if you would, so I can write it out, what was the sentence that you think it is then?
The hero goes with the horses to the kings.
Kings, plural.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. To the king. Okay. So I missed the to the king part. That was the important part. Okay. To the king. Okay, good, good. Thank you. Thank you.
Did somebody say there's an answer key to Agenes right at the end somewhere?
I think that they did.
It's actually in the back of the book.
Okay. Is it in our PDF? I have it scrolled down, so I'm assuming it's in our PDF too.
Yeah, it should be. It should be all the way at the back, toward the back of the PDF.
Okay.
Okay. It says answers to exercises is on page 242.
Okay. Good. 242. Okay. Good. 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 Well, that's good. Well, then I can check my answers too. Then. All right. Good. Thank you. That's good. Well, I've only gotten that first part. But anyway, today's lesson was very good. I appreciated his breakdown of the Sunday. Anybody have anything else you want to address?
No, I can't think of anything.
Okay, okay.
I think Samyukta is saying she's taken a vow of silence.
Okay, no worries, no worries.
Okay, so she's typed out the answer.
Oh, okay, thank you. Ah, super. Thank you, Samyukta, for writing it out. Excellent. And so, yeah, no, I'll have to turn to the back next time. That'll help. But I'm finding it fascinating. Plus, the Eugenies, again, for me, the way he breaks up, it's making it clear what the instrumental and the dative is versus the nominative and the accusative. Like, the stuff beforehand, until I read the Eugenies, I just wasn't catching on. Like, even though I'm an English speaker, I don't break everything up, you know, down to such tiny bits and parts of the grammar. So anyway, I'm just in love with Eugenies.
Okay.
Okay. Well, if no one has anything, I could use breakfast. So I think I'll click off, but we'll see you guys later. So have a good week.
All right. You too, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye,
Sean. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.